Welcome to Friday's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. A little bit later tonight, we have our memorial to the people of New Orleans that we're going to play for you. And also, we have some comments about about Beck. Do we have Beck? Oh, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that later. Glenn Beck, the Messiah. Oh, my goodness. An update for you. We told you last night of the story of the mother from Barbados who had been here for months with her daughter, her 7-year-old daughter, Niam. Niam is undergoing treatment for stage 4 neuroblastomas, cancers. And the mother and the daughter have been in the United States for 9 months since doctors in Barbados discovered that this child had a huge tumor in her abdomen. And the mother came, brought the daughter here to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta because this particular hospital here in Atlanta offers cutting-edge treatment in so many areas for children, but especially in this particular situation. The mother went to extend their visitors' visas. The daughter's was extended. See, the child is still in treatment and has a lot more treatment to do. The child's visa was extended, but the mother was only given a month. And it was set to run out next week, which would mean the mother would have to leave the country, leaving the child behind. Now it appears that visa extension may come through after all. Her immigration attorney got a call this morning from immigration authorities, and the woman's attorney was told that immigration is working on, whatever the hell that means, extending her visa to allow her to stay in the country until November. And I guess in November, they're going to have to go through this again. Now, I mentioned this last night. For you right-wingers who are listening and say things of the sort of, throw the bitch out and her little bratty child. They're here for free stuff. No, you morons. The family has private health insurance. They paid their own way. They're paying their way while they're here. But the first reaction of the right wing of the teabags, which used to be the Republican Party, the first reaction of the teabags is to throw the kid out and the mother. You know, they want children who are born here to be thrown out immediately if the parent is not properly documented. You know, take them right out of the incubator and put them on a boat back to whatever country they came from. And most teabaggers assume that country is Mexico. Well, you guys are going to have your day tomorrow, though, aren't you? Ah, oh, my God. We have, did you put that up at the website, the guy walking through? Oh, you got to see this. There's a man named Edward Kimmel. He's 58 years old. He's from Tacoma Park, Maryland. And he was speaking truth to idiocy a few months ago. He walks through the teabagger protest on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., and he's got a huge sign with him that he carries. The sign says, public option now. That's all it says. Now, if it weren't for the cops that escorted him through this rabid mob of freedom-loving, First Amendment-supporting bag freaks, they would have eaten him alive. I want you to go look at the video. It's 5 minutes. And all it is, this guy walking through, but listen to the audio and watch the reaction from these freedom-loving, Constitution-supporting, free speech-spouting teabaggers. You know, you've heard me say on this program many times that the most cowardly sons of bitches in America are right-wingers. They cannot tolerate it's and who pointed out? Michael and Roswell pointed out teabaggers, right-wingers, are unable to handle anything other than dictates. They have to be told what to do. They have to be told what to do. They need a strong leader. They need somebody who orders them around. That's the reason this little turd, Glenn Beck, is so popular right now. And God, I hope tomorrow his 15 minutes will finally expire. Oh, please. His 15 minutes of fame. Now, how that expires is up to the people that are there. I couldn't care less, but I just hope it happens. But anyway, I want you to look at this video as soon as you have a chance. Go to MikeMalloy.com, and it's there. And you'll know where it is because of the headline we put with it. But here's this guy walking through this hysterical, rabid crowd of white people. He's white, too. But I didn't see one person of color or ethnic diversity other than what appeared to be middle-aged and older white people just screaming their guts out at this man as he walks through the crowd with a sign that just says public option now. That's all it says. And the threats. And finally, you'll notice in the video, he has, when it's all over, he has about five or six cops around him who have to escort him through the crowd. So check it out. You know how I feel about religious insanity. This is from Haaretz in Israel. There's a company there. It's called City Pass, and they have developed light rail through the city of Jerusalem, kind of like the BART system in San Francisco or MARTA here. You know, light rail. Nothing heavy duty, not like the New York subway, not, you know, just light rail. And the CEO of this company, excuse me, City Pass, said a couple of days ago that he's decided to have segregated men-only and women-only cars on the Jerusalem light rail train. His name is Yair Nava. Mr. Nava said, quote, the train was built to serve everyone. I think it is required to create alternatives for everyone, and that option exists because of the train's division into cars. It is not a problem to declare every third or fourth car a Mehadrin, a kosher car. The Mehadrin cars would serve Jerusalem's ultra-Orthodox population because they don't mix genders. Now, that's a male thing from ancient Judaism because men are terrified. Orthodox Jewish men are terrified of women, especially when they're on their periods. Just like Christian Orthodox men are terrified of women anytime. Muslim Orthodox men are terrified of women. They're all terrified of women. So these Orthodox Jews in Jerusalem have insisted on kosher cars. Now, kosher means no chicks allowed. This is like when you were a kid. I don't know if you did this. We did it. We had a clubhouse. No girls allowed. This is what the Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox Jews in Jerusalem are saying. Rachel Azaria, a member of the Jerusalem City Council, one of the opponents of the Mehadrin bus lines in Jerusalem, criticized the decision by the company, saying that Mr. Nave, the owner of the company, is apparently unaware of the high court ruling in this country forbidding this sort of segregation, end quote. Well, you know, as it is in this country, it is also in Israel, the high court can go screw itself. What the religious fanatics want, no matter what their minority is, the religious fanatics get. So if you are Jewish and you decide to go to Jerusalem to Israel to tour, if you go to Jerusalem and you get on the light rail, watch out. If you get on the wrong light rail car, I don't know, the religious police, the ultra-Orthodox rabbis will come up with a stick and start beating you until you get off. Gosh, I despise religion. We'll be right back.
a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Well, as long as we're talking about the ultra-Orthodox Jews, WikiLeaks has released more memos. This time it's a CIA memo titled, "What if foreigners see the United States as an exporter of terrorism?" Yeah, what if, right? In which American Jews in Israel was one of the four groups mentioned. And this is from Haaretz again, the Israeli newspaper. WikiLeaks released a CIA document yesterday that examines the trend of Americans committing terrorist acts overseas, including American Jews in Israel. American Jews in Israel were one of the four groups mentioned in the classified report titled, "What if foreigners see the United States as an exporter of terrorism?" The report reads, quote, "Some American Jews have supported and even engaged in violent acts against perceived enemies of Israel. In 1994, Baruch Goldstein, an American Jewish doctor from New York, emigrated to Israel, joined the extremist group Koch, and killed 29 Palestinians during their prayers in the mosque at the Tomb of the Patriarchs in Hebron, which helped trigger a wave of bus bombings by Hamas in early 1995, end quote. Other groups mentioned were Irish Americans who supported the IRA, a group of Muslim American men who traveled to Pakistan last year to engage in jihad, a Pakistani American man, David Headley, who conducted surveillance for the Lashkar-e-Taiba terrorist group ahead of the attack in Mumbai, India in November 2008 that killed more than 160 people. The leaked report was compiled February this year by the CIA's Red Cell. Red Cell has nothing to do with communism, which, according to the memorandum, was tasked with, quote, taking a pronounced out-of-the-box approach, end quote, that will provoke thought and offer an alternative viewpoint on the full range of analytic issues. What? But I like that, we export terrorism all the time. There's no question. I mean, that's one of our remaining exports is terrorism. Now, we don't necessarily send the people out to do the murder and mayhem, but we provide the wherewithal for religious fanatics and political fanatics to do it. But without our support, our money, our weaponry, whatever, it wouldn't get done. And we don't always export. Remember where the bombers for 9/11 were trained? They weren't trained. I don't think they were trained in Afghanistan. If I remember, they were trained in Minnesota, in Florida, in Texas. But we didn't invade Florida. Not that that's not such a bad idea, but we didn't invade. Oh, well, never mind. You know all this. And also, this blew me away, the biography of Adolf Hitler is probably the most twisted in all of history. Here you can add one more twist. DNA tests apparently show that Hitler may have had Jewish and African ancestry. The British newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, says that saliva samples were collected from 39 Hitler relatives, and it reports a chromosome called so-and-so, which showed up in their samples, is rare in Western Europe, like Germany, and is most commonly found in the Berbers of Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia, as well as among Ashkenazi and Sephardic Jews. This chromosome, which accounts for approximately 18 to 20% of Ashkenazi and 8.6 to 30% of Sephardic Y chromosomes, appears to be one of the major founding lineages of the Jewish population. Well, a professor at a Flemish research university said, quote, Hitler would not have been happy, end quote. He says that Hitler apparently wasn't Aryan, what the Nazis would have considered pure. But the research doesn't seem to be conclusive with respect to which groups Hitler may have descended from. But it's very interesting to me, you know, with the advent now of DNA profiling. You know, you get a swab of somebody's spit or their blood or what have you, or, you know, any of many different cell samples. And, man, you got them. You got them. So I would tend to believe that Hitler probably did have, what was his Schickelgruber? Was that not, that was his mother's name or something? If he is Jewish, or descended from Jewish ancestry, it doesn't mean anything except to the right-wing skinheads in the United States and Western Europe who have put Hitler on the same level as Glenn Beck. They will freak out when they find that Hitler may have been Jewish. Wouldn't you think?
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
About 25 before the hour. All right. Tomorrow's a big day. People for American Way has issued a press release about Beck's so-called Restoring Honor rally. Oh, God. Oh, my God. People for American Way said, Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech was one of America's proudest moments and helped define the core values of a nation. Dr. King's speech was a powerful call for tolerance, compassion, and unity in a harshly divided country. On that day in August of 1963, his march on Washington gathered hundreds of thousands of Americans devoted to expanding equality and opportunity. 47 years later, Glenn Beck is trying to appropriate Dr. King's legacy in order to push his agenda of intolerance, fear, and division. Beck says he's, quote, reclaiming civil rights, end quote. In fact, he's insulting exactly what Dr. King and his movement stood for. Beck has made himself famous for his attacks on progressives, Muslim Americans, union members, and even churches who preach social justice values to which Dr. King dedicated his life. Beck has claimed that Obama has a deep-seated hatred of white people. Beck is not restoring honor to our country. He's fanning the flames of tired old prejudices amplified and enlarged for political gain. What a thug. Well, tomorrow, every network in probably around the globe is going to be there. Beck will get what he wants. He will indeed. And, of course, he may get more than he bargained for at his Beckapalooza. Since Beck likes to make biblical references, let me make one. When Moses went up onto Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments, he left the Israelites for 40 days and 40 nights. The Israelites feared that he would not return and asked Aaron to make gods for them. Aaron complied and gathered up the Israelites' golden earrings. He melted them and constructed the golden calf. Aaron also built an altar before the calf, and the next day the Israelites made offerings and celebrated. The Lord told Moses that his people had corrupted themselves, and he planned to eliminate them. However, Moses argued and pleaded that they should be spared, and the Lord relented. Moses went down from the mountain, but upon seeing the calf, he too became angry. He threw down the tablets upon which God's law had been written, breaking them. Moses burnt the golden calf in a fire, ground it to powder, scattered it on water, and forced the Israelites to drink it. Aaron admitted collecting the gold, throwing it into the fire, and said it came out as a calf. Moses then gathered the sons of Levi and set them to slaying a large number of men, 3,000 Israelites. A plague also struck the Israelites. Nevertheless, the Lord stated that he would one day visit the Israelites' sin upon them. Oh my. And as Moses had broken the tablets, the Lord instructed him to return to Mount Sinai and receive a replacement. So who's what in that little mythological tale where Yahweh was in a death struggle with Baal, Baal being the god of the Canaanites, who was an earth god, who was a fertility god, who was a god of the harvest, whereas Yahweh was this vicious, mean bastard who just wanted everybody to kill everybody. So who's who in this story as regarding what's going to happen tomorrow? I guess we'll find out, right? You ready? Glenn Beck describes in his most egomaniacal terms here. Glenn Beck describes in his most egomaniacal terms imaginal here the enormous historical impact his anti-MLK I Have a Dream rally tomorrow will be. As he personally, Glenn Beck, will single-handedly reclaim the civil rights movement from those evil Negroes who stole it from the white man so many years ago. I'm telling you, the golden calf, that's who you should worship. Because we, as well, we all know, the civil rights movement was started by white America and is for white America and will once again be returned to white America by Glenn Beck. Sounds like Beck is running for president of the Skinhead Party.
This is going to be an iconic event. This is going to be a moment that you'll never be able to paint people as haters, racists, none of it.
And if you
this, is, this is a moment, quite honestly, that I think we reclaim the civil rights movement.
The golden
calf.
It
has been so distorted and so turned upside down. It's an abomination. We must repair honor and integrity and honesty. I tell you right now, we are on the right side of history. We are on the side of individual freedoms and liberties, and damn it, we will reclaim the civil rights moment. We will take that movement because we were the people that did it in the first place.
Really? I'll be damned. I don't know. I'm speechless. All these years, I thought it was black folk throwing off the chains of white oppression. I don't know how I got it wrong. Yes?
Is he honestly going to stand up on a stage?
I hope so.
With a bunch of white people and Sarah Palin and look out on the 47th anniversary at the very site.
Yes.
And he's going to say, we are taking back the civil rights movement because it's ours.
Well, you know what is really kind of contemptible and disgusting? We all know what Dr. King stood for, but he had limits, as everyone does. And for Glenn Beck to be using such a commemoration for Glenn Beck's purposes is vile beyond belief. But you know who's going to be up there on the podium with him? One of Dr. King's nieces. Now, I've said before, the generation King's Dr. King's children and his nieces and nephews, for the most part, are crazy. They're crazy. I mean, they're literally out of their minds. His two sons, here in Atlanta and his daughter have been fighting tooth and nail, taking each other to court for two decades over who gets the money. They, the King family will sue you if you play the I Have a Dream speech on your video player without express written permission from them, and you have to pay for it. So the King family is, by any definition that you choose to use, insane. And I think they get it from their mother, who has also passed away. I mean, Mama King was, they used to call her the Queen Bee. Ooh. So anyway, one of the daughter, one of the nieces of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is going to be on the podium with Glenn Beck. And I don't know how to relate to this. I can only relate to this like a white person. And in 1963, that was in August, and in November, the right wing in this country murdered John F. Kennedy. And then 5 years later, they murdered Dr. King. So I have a theory. I don't care if you're left or right. They also murdered George Lincoln Rockwell. They tried to murder, what's his name, governor of Alabama. the one that was, Wallace. I couldn't think of it, George Wallace. They got Bobby Kennedy. They got Malcolm X. Anytime somebody steps out of the crowd, I don't care if they're left or right, and starts agitating too far, even if it's a right winger like Beck, even if Beck is this great apologist for corporate America and has no problem offering oral sex to any capitalist who comes his way, as long as he gets his share of the loot. But eventually, the real power, Glenn Beck is a useful fool, a stooge. And the right wing saw the Kennedy brothers that way. They saw George Lincoln Rockwell that way. He was the head of the American Nazi Party. When an American citizen gets too popular and has too much of a following, then he or she will be brought down. That's just the way it goes, because capitalist America, they appreciate these stooges like Beck, but they don't want them getting too independent. So we'll see what happens. Washington writes, Mike, when Beck has spent as many nights in jail as Dr. King in the name of civil rights, when he is beaten as many times as Dr. King in the name of civil rights, when he is spat upon as many times as Dr. King in the name of civil rights, I might give a rat's ass what he has to say about civil rights. Until then, I'll just consider him the same ignorant, arrogant, greedy, lying, narcissistic, crybaby, flunk-out, wet brain that I've always considered him to be. Jason in Newcastle, Washington. It's just amazing to me the what has to be done when somebody wants, really wants, more than they want life, when they want their 15 minutes of fame guaranteed to them by Andy Warhol so many years ago, what they will do. Sarah Palin resigned the governorship of Alaska. Kate and eight, what is that? Gaza, Kate plus eight. That's another example. What about the Octomom? I mean, people will do things, no matter how bizarre or insane or absurd, to get the attention that they've got to have or they die. Glenn Beck, being a dry drunk and being a religious fanatic, and I mean, he's got this image of himself that is just astonishing. I don't think I have run across an ego like this ever, you know, not in contemporary times. And I know Sean Hannity. So this guy is just so over the top. I mean, and again, it's hysterically funny, except for the fact that Beck knows what he's doing. He's inciting people to violence, to attempted murder, to murder. And, you know, again, referencing the Bible that Beck claims to believe in, as ye sow, so also shall ye reap. And it means a lot more than cast your bread upon the waters and you get back soggy bread. I mean, Beck, like so many American demagogues, is setting up a series of reactions that eventually will devour him. For real. Now, that's the entertaining part, except for the fact that it's not going to be very pretty, I don't think. There is hubris. And then there's Glenn Beck. So, like most of America, I will probably watch the evening news tomorrow night because you won't be able to escape it. And I think what I'll be looking for are the videos of the violence that most assuredly will occur, unless Beck has some plan of when he gathers the multitudes after he has attempted to feed them with the loaves and fishes and it doesn't work. And he attempts to walk on the reflecting pool and almost drowns. When he then realizes that the crowd is growing surly, he will have his, I don't know, his producer or somebody overhead, you know, look like a helicopter taking aerial shots of the enormous crowd. Actually, they'll be spraying a kind of sedative, a mist, an inhalant that will go all over this crowd. And everybody will stop their move toward violence. That's the only way there will not be violence tomorrow. Remember, what time is it? It's 54 minutes past the hour on a Friday evening, August 27th, when your humble and obedient servant is making that prediction. We shall see. When we come back, boy, I've got a Prairie 2 report. I've got a report from Kay Petrini. And what else do we have here? We have what certain cities are going through in this budget crisis that is horrifying. A conservative group accused no surprise here. Conservative group accused of abusing its tax status. Oh, and something about the miners in Chile that are trapped. How far? 3,000 down? Is that where they are? 3,000 feet down? 2,000 feet? 2,500? Something that you should know about the mining company that they all work for. I had somebody write to me the other night and say, look, you know, it looks like the mining company took care of these people. What happened to, you know, why do companies in the United States, like Massey Industries or whatever it's called, they don't provide this? Well, and I read that email in the air, and the guy has sent it to me. It was sincere in writing it. I was sincere in reading it, but there's something you should know. And we'll get to that when we come back, too. Kathy keeps shrieking in my ears, Katrina. Yes, we'll do. We have a 4-minute and 30-second montage featuring George Bush, Pickles Bush. What was Chertoff's first name? Huh? Michael Chertoff. Chertoff, of course, loosely translated from the Russian, is of the devil or of Satan. We've got some Nancy Pelosi. We have El Rushbo. And we have the president of Jefferson Parish, Aaron Broussard. You remember him. And remember, in 2004, a year before this happened, George Bush diverted most of the money for levee repair to his war in Iraq. And as a result, thousands of, or hundreds of people died. And some of you right-wing trolls wonder why I refer to Bush and Cheney as murderers. Oh, never mind. Dumbasses. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us because I want you to hear this. I'm Mike Malloy. Is my game. Stick around. All right, going from the ridiculously absurd, the Beckapalooza tomorrow, to the politically tragic, in addition to being a tragedy of human proportions in this country, not seen, I don't think ever. Talking about what happened in New Orleans 5 years ago. All the networks, television networks, cable networks, over-the-air networks have been there, right? You notice that? They're all there. And I have no fault with the way the networks covered that horror 5 years ago. I just wish they would have been a little bit more honest where it concerned the failure of the Bush crime family to do anything. What we have for you here is a montage of voices featuring George Bush, Pickles, his wife, a little bit of Michael Chertoff, Nancy Pelosi, the Pig Man, and the president of the Jefferson Parish, Aaron Broussard. And keep in mind that a year before this tragedy, Bush diverted the money that was targeted for repair of the levees to the capitalist war in Iraq. And it took him 5 days to finally visit New Orleans. And then he went in a helicopter? Listen.
Come down, Bush. Come on, come down. Come down, Bush. Come on.
Or not.
Come down.
We don't have it? Okay. Okay. Kathy has a problem with the equipment. So we'll try it again in a few minutes as soon as she gets it straightened out. The big buildup. And then crash. Um, All right, going to Prairie 2. He's got a couple in here that I have let build up. So I think what I'm going to do here is he wrote one yesterday, or I got it yesterday, our economic affairs advisor. And this is what he wrote. The Dow sank below 10,000 Thursday. And that could be the threshold of perception that finally catches people's attention. But then again, maybe not, since Americans barely notice that they own the only occupied house on the block. Nationwide, 1 in 10 of your neighbors is at risk of foreclosure. But if you live in a factory town, that number is really closer to 10 in 10. As corporations continue to fire workers by the thousands. New unemployment claims were down, so things are better, right? Well, of course not. We still have far too many claims each week to think we aren't really losing hundreds of thousands of jobs each month. No matter what the government statistics say, we are gaining a few jobs. A total of 302,000 people were added to extended unemployment just last week, and that's about the same number as the previous week. This was net increase. People falling off in 99 weeks are no longer counted, but act as a plus for the unemployment statistics. Starving homeless people are a plus. Welcome to the libertarian paradise of America. Democrats should be screaming about this, but if they do, they get no FaceTime on corporate media, and they, you know, really want to get reelected, so they stay quiet. More than 40,000 factories have closed in just the last 10 years from outsourcing. And another 90,000 factories are on the verge of closing. As a part of Obama's new leaner government, they propose to cut the budget by closing the tiny unit at the Bureau of Labor Statistics that keeps track of outsourcing. It's the new normal, so why keep track of it? It's as silly as counting homeless people. Just step over them and run them out of town, as more and more cities are doing. The stimulus was supposed to keep things going through the election, but that's looking rather iffy. Republicans, of course, are hoping for things to go really bad before the election, and they may just get their wish. The latest scare story that may be responsible for the Thursday's market sag is the Hindenburg omen, a complicated formula for timing market crashes. The problem is that even in hindsight, it's only been right 25% of the time. But like lightning jumping from the Zeppelin to the landing tower, there might be something to it. Wear your asbestos underwear just in case. Of course, we are riding on a bubble economy that might as well be a highly flammable cloth bag filled with hydrogen. You don't really need any omens to predict it will be a fiery end. You see, the Zeppelin Hindenburg was built from highly flammable material. The hydrogen gas wasn't really the issue. The same way the economy is fundamentally flawed, the stock market bubble isn't really an issue. It just makes a bigger fireball. Oh, the humanity. PrairieNumeral2.com. If you want to go to his website and tell him how much you appreciate the things he submits free to this program. And the latest thing, the latest right-wing gobbledygook, accuracy in media, which is not anything to do with accuracy. That's just the name. They have a guy there named Cliff Kincaid. And he is he's starting to demand proof that President Obama was baptized. This is reported by somebody. Accuracy in media also wants accountability. What AIM has done is quote directly from Obama's books about his spiritual and political journey. We've pointed out that Obama's claim about his own baptism, as reported in his second memoir, The Audacity of Hope, is subject to interpretation because of lack of detail about when and how he was baptized and by whom. It appears, based on information provided by Obama's own church, that Obama was describing how he became a member of that church. Obama's claim of being baptized is presented in the context of discussing the fact that he was not born and baptized a Christian. He describes his Muslim father and grandfather in attendance in a Muslim school as he was growing up. Obama acknowledges that before he joined Reverend Wright's church, some people regarded him as a Muslim. Wright himself dabbled in Islam. Before establishing his church, Obama concedes, the proof of the baptism claim is precisely what is lacking in this book. There's no need or demand for a baptismal certificate, but there is no detail about the ceremony other than talking about a walk down an aisle and a profession of faith, and no information about who performed the baptism, who attended. Traditionally, water is used in such a ceremony. There's no reference to water in Obama's book. And you think these people are not crazy? Oh, my God. Prove you got baptized, you Muslim, you Kenyan. Prove it. You know, every time we have a Democratic president, this happens. With Roosevelt, it was the Liberty League. With I just read this in Mother Jones. With Kennedy, it was, well, they killed him, but it was the John Birch Society. With Clinton, it was the Arkansas Project, and now Obama has to deal with the teabaggers. So, you know, when they talk about the baggers are this grassroots group and nothing like it in the history of American politics, that's nonsense. It happens every single time there's a Democratic president. And Obama is just reaping the latest rewards of trying to run this country.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. My producer engineer informs me that at the bottom of the hour here, we will hear the montage of the Katrina tragedy. From our education affairs correspondent, Kate Petrini in San Francisco, who writes, happy Friday, Mike. Here's a sampling of the comments I received from my students regarding the controversy about the mosque, quote-quote, at Ground Zero. Naturally, I picked the ones that stood out. There were some arguments against it on the grounds that, quote, the U.S. has been at war with Iraq for almost 7 years and because of the attack that took place on 9/11, end quote. Arg, 7 years later, that lie is still out there. I can almost excuse it with these students because they were 8 years old when the Bush crime family launched their illegal invasion. But if this doesn't illustrate how effective those lies were, I don't know what does. The whole debate makes no sense. The mosque isn't to be built at Ground Zero. It is to be built two New York City blocks away. Just because the terrorists were Muslim doesn't mean that everyone who's a Muslim is out to destroy America or harm its citizens. The media have made this generalization that is extremely deceptive and unfair. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free expression thereof. It does not say that certain religions can only practice in certain states, in certain towns, on certain blocks, or in certain streets. Refusing the building of this, quote, mosque, end quote, which is actually a Muslim community center, just like a Jewish community center, it would be extremely disrespectful to the Bill of Rights, the founders of our country, and the people who came to this country for freedom of religion. Here are some examples of writing from Kay's students. First, If America really does allow its people to freely worship, then the mosque should be built. There are no laws that restrict the people of a certain religion to carry out their religious practices. Not allowing the Muslims to express their Islamic practices is a form of prejudice. As U.S. citizens, we should tolerate others' religions and beliefs. Two, another student. My view is simple. Many Americans are still hurt and sensitive about the event that happened on 9/11. So their emotions and feelings cause them to object to the idea of a mosque built near Ground Zero. However, since our Bill of Rights states that every religion can be freely worshipped, I believe the Muslims should have their mosque. Third one. The controversy seems to be blown out of proportion. Americans are against the mosque, saying it's disrespectful and inappropriate for it to be built on, quote, hallowed ground, end quote. But the Bill of Rights states freedom of religion. Why are Muslims an exception to this? Fourth, I don't think they should build the mosque near Ground Zero, because if they do, it will cause more violence toward Muslims. Fifth, if a Jewish or Catholic community center were to be built there, nobody would care. But since it's a Muslim community center, it's a huge deal. Kay writes then, so even though I'm dog tired after the first full week of school, I'm able to go home today feeling a glimmer of hope for the future. Kay. And you can check everything out that Kay writes at kaysreportcard.com. K's, K-A-Y-S, kaysreportcard.com. Email from Daryl in Dunwoody, Georgia. Mike, sorry to bother you again, but this month has been one of the worst for me. I'm about to lose my mind. I just heard an ignorant, fat, sociopathic white boy, Glenn Beck, state that he and his kind were going to reclaim the civil rights movement, which originally belonged to them. Please, help me. The right wing has, since Newt, taken words and phrases and claimed them as theirs. The strengths of progressive leaders have been used against them. John Kerry, who was awarded a Silver Star, Bronze Star, and four Purple Hearts, was demonized as a coward and traitor. Clinton, one of the most conservative presidents we've ever had, was labeled the most socialist communist leader in U.S. history. Obama's policies caused the financial meltdown. Up is down, left is right, in is out, and cats and dogs are living together. I called out Stephanie Miller today because she was inclined to forgive Ken Mellman, who came out of the closet for his hypocritical ads during the 2000 election, demonizing gays. Why do we as progressives have to always forgive? Will progressives forgive Beck when he falls from grace? Will Obama continue to give warm fuzzies to conservative fly monkeys? I am really going to try and listen tonight, but it's going to be difficult. I'm just tired of conservatives and their shenanigans. Daryl from Dunwoody. Well, Daryl, stick around, man. I mean, this is a refuge area. This is a tarp thrown over a couple of folding chairs on a highway someplace in Afghanistan. Stay with us, man. I mean, you know, this is a refuge area. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will attempt once again to bring you the voices from the Katrina tragedy of 5 years ago. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 25 before the hour. All right, you ready? This is Voices, the Katrina montage featuring Rush, Pickles, Chertoff, Nancy Pelosi, the Pig Man, and Aaron Broussard, the president of Jefferson Parish.
Come down, Bush, come on, come down. Come down, Bush, come on, come down. Come down, Bush, come on, come down.
We didn't know about this in the White House. I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees.
When I said to the president that he should fire Michael Brown because of all that went wrong with all that didn't go right last week, and he said, what didn't go right?
And Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The storm caused huge suffering, as I told you, but it's an opportunity. I believe in urban homesteading. That says we're going to identify federal property, provide lots that they'll have for free, so long as they build a house on there with a mortgage.
You need to know that our whole nation cares about you. You're not alone. The work of recovery is moving forward. All major gasoline pipelines are now in operation.
We're working to help these pipelines get up and running.
Yes, sir. Gasoline station up and running. So progress is being made.
Particularly spent a lot of time talking about the damage done to our energy infrastructure and its effect on the availability and price of gasoline.
People in faraway places like Washington, D.C. still hear you.
Can't imagine what it's like to be waving a sign that said, come and get me now.
Each of us who have children know what it's like to lose your child for a minute in a department store. So we can imagine what these families are feeling and what they're thinking.
We have been abandoned by our own country.
We want the Mississippi people to lay out the Mississippi vision about what this important part of the world is going to look like. We look forward to hearing your vision so we can more better do our job.
The left is dancing on the graves of black people. Death toll is way, way, way below what projections.
I myself thought we had dodged a bullet. When that storm came through at first, people said, whew. There was a sense of relaxation. There was a sense of relaxation at a moment, a critical moment.
When you think about taking your own child to the grocery store and getting separated from them in the grocery store, you can imagine what it would be like.
10,000 deaths minimum, said the mayor. Body bags for 25,000 are being flown into the region, blah, 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 blah.
I think the progress we're making is significant. We've now got a major National Guard presence in virtually every community in Mississippi.
Evacuees who have not yet registered should contact FEMA. We need to know who you are.
We had Walmart deliver 3 trucks of water. FEMA turned them back.
More than 500,000 evacuee families have gotten emergency help.
My only point is it's hopeful. There's hope. If I were a young entrepreneur, it'd be an exciting place to go.
The aftermath of Katrina has proven to be a godsend.
We want the Mississippi people to lay out the Mississippi vision about what this important part of the world is going to look like. We look forward to hearing your vision so we can more better do our job.
Around the country, children who've been displaced because of Hurricane Katrina are starting to school this week.
It's good to see, be able to look in people's eyes and not see them all bloodshot. I'm sure they're still concerned about the future, but the eyes have cleared up.
I also want to encourage anybody who is affected by Hurricane Katrina to make sure their children are in school.
Nobody's coming to get us. Nobody's coming to get us.
Life's not easy.
Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday.
Mardi Gras in September, the Big Easy.
Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday.
Liberals are dancing the Cajun reel with thousands of grinning skeletons.
The secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences.
Millions of people evacuated and scattered. It's an amazing period in our history when you think about it.
For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
There's a sense of optimism. There's a hope. There's a little bounce in people's step.
Yeah, Mama, somebody's coming to get you.
It's like there's a great capacity to absorb hurt.
Well, who wants to be depressed? So what we choose to do is just laugh at these yokels.
She drowned Friday night. She drowned Friday night.
Making their bed, they can lay in it. They're taking their shower, they can drown in it.
I can remember first choppering over here and seeing the incredible devastation done to the bridges and highways. I don't know if you know that or not, but flying in or driving in, there's something different. We got a fantastic opportunity. And out of those huge heaps of timber that used to be homes, a better Mississippi will emerge. The good news is, and it's hard for some to see it now, that out of this chaos is going to come a fantastic Gulf Coast. It's amazing what you can find in the rubbish. Out of the rubbles of Trent Lott's house, his dad lost his entire house. There's going to be a fantastic house, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch.
When I'm in need, she kill me, mom. When I'm in need, I gotta
Well, do you remember that?
I gotta
The most disgusting and vile and hateful, and I swear to God, if I were king of America, I'd put him up against the wall back then, were the statements made by the pig man, Limbaugh. Let them drown in their own shower. What a filthy, miserable bastard. What was this? Bush was promising everybody a lot. All they had to do is build a house. All to get a mortgage. Jesus Christ. This is our country. This is the kind of filth, the kind of absolute filth that is the right wing, the Republicans, the absolute filth. You heard them in their own voices. Cheney was in there. You should have gotten Tom DeLay where he said to the little black kid as he rubbed the little black kid's head, "It's just like camp, isn't it, boy? It's just like camp."
Except, you know, all your relatives are dead and your pets are floating somewhere. But, hey, it's like camp. Isn't it like camp?
It's just like camp.
Well, my favorite is Laura Bush, who, first off, couldn't pronounce the hurricane.
Corona.
And then just kept talking about, like, when you are missing relatives in drowning underwater. You know, and she keeps saying, well, we all know what it's like when your children get lost in the supermarket. So you can imagine, I know just what they're feeling because I never know. You know, usually we would find Jenna and the other one over in the liquor department sometime, but... You know, when they're lost, it can be frightening.
I hope you'll put that up at the website, that montage. Put it near the video that you put up about the guy walking through the teabag rally carrying the sign that said public option now with a police escort. Oh, my God. David Nywert at... Crooks and Liars. He does a comparison. Since Glenn Beck is claiming he's going to reclaim the civil rights movement, at age 15, Martin Luther King Jr. enters Morehouse College in Atlanta after skipping the 9th and 12th grades. At age 19, Glenn Beck skips college to host Morning Zoo radio show and creates a wacky alter ego, Clydie Clyde. At age 25, Martin Luther King becomes pastor of the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. At age 23, Beck takes over Phoenix's Y95 morning zoo show featuring a mascot, Zippy the Chimp. At age 27, Martin Luther King leads the Montgomery bus boycott despite his arrest and the firebombing of his house. At age 23, Beck is arrested during a radio prank involving the attempted theft of Christmas decorations from the city of Scottsdale. At age 28, Martin Luther King Jr. helps to found the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, a civil rights organization which he leads until his death. At age 24, Glenn Beck hires Jessica Hahn, former mistress of the televangelist Jim Baker, as his show's, quote, prize and weather bunny. At age 29, Dr. King narrowly misses death after being stabbed in the chest at a book signing. At age 26, Beck terrifies a bank teller by putting a gerbil down the deposit tube in an on-air prank. At age 34, Dr. King writes his letter from Birmingham jail while incarcerated there. At age 28, Beck is arrested for speeding in his DeLorean with one of the doors open. At age 34, King delivers his I Have a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. And at age 30, Beck cuts off his ponytail. From age 28 to 38, Dr. King receives 20 honorary doctorates from universities around the world. At age 35, he becomes the youngest ever recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. At age 34, Beck makes his first foray into talk radio and mispronounces Osama bin Laden. At age 39, Dr. King is assassinated on April 4th, 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee. And at age 41, Glenn Beck ponders personally killing Michael Moore on air. Oh, my God. And I'll tell you, to the Cretans who worship at the feet of Glenn Beck, I think y'all are going to get exactly what you want. I really do. We'll be back. Stay with us. Forgetting folks were too broke to evacuate. Chicken starving and they dying of thirst. I really had to go and check on them refineries first. Making a killing off the price of gas. He would have been up in Connecticut twice as fast. After all that we've been through, nothing's changed. You can call Red Cross, but the fact remains that George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. Come down, Bush, come on, come down. 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 George Bush ain't a gold black people. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. Come down, George, come on, come down. Some podcast trivia at the bottom of the hour, so stick around for that, where you can win a 1-year subscription to the Malloy Show. Podcast download, commercial free, yada, yada, yada. Bob Herbert has a column in the Washington Post, or New York Times, I'm sorry. Washington Post, oh my goodness. I want to share with you, America's better than Glenn Beck. For all of his celebrity, Mr. Beck is an ignorant, divisive, pathetic figure. On the anniversary of the great 1963 march on Washington, he will stand in the shadows of giants, Abraham Lincoln, and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Who do you think is more representative of this nation? Consider a brief sampling of the rhetoric. Lincoln: a house divided against itself cannot stand. King: never succumb to the temptation of becoming bitter. Beck: I think the president is a racist. Washington was on edge on the morning of August 28, 1963. The day was sunny and very warm, and Negroes, as we were called in those days, were coming into town by the tens of thousands. The sale of liquor was banned. Troops stood by to restore order if matters got out of control. President John F. Kennedy waited anxiously in the White House to see how the day would unfold. It unfolded splendidly. The crowd for the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, as it was known, grew to some 250,000. Nearly a quarter of the marchers were white. They gathered at the Lincoln Memorial, where they were enthralled by the singing of Mahalia Jackson and Joan Baez. The march was all about inclusion, and the day seemed to swell with an extraordinary sense of camaraderie and good feeling. The climax, of course, was Dr. King's transcendent I Have a Dream speech. Gerald Podair, a professor of American Studies at Lawrence University in Wisconsin, has called August 28, 1963, quote, the most important single day in civil rights history, end quote. This is the rhetorical legacy that Glenn Beck, a small man with a mean message, has chosen to tread upon with his cynical rally on Saturday at that very same Lincoln Memorial. Beck is a provocateur who likes to play with matches in the tinderbox of racial and ethnic confrontation. He seems oblivious to the real danger of his execrable behavior. He famously described President Obama as a man, quote, who has a deep-seated hatred for white people or the white culture, end quote. He is an integral part of the vicious effort by the Tea Party and other elements of the right wing to portray Mr. Obama as somehow alien, a strange figure who is separate and apart from, outside of, ordinary American life. As the watchdog group Media Matters for America has noted, Beck said of the president, quote, he chose to use the name Barack for a reason, to identify not with America, You don't take the name Barack to identify with America. You take the name Barack to identify with what? Your heritage? The heritage maybe of your father in Kenya, who is a radical? End quote. Facts and reality mean nothing to Beck, and there is no road too low for him to slither upon. The Southern Poverty Law Center tells us that in a twist on the civil rights movement, Beck said on the air that he, quote, wouldn't be surprised if in our lifetime dogs and fire hoses are released or opened on us. I wouldn't be surprised if a few of us get a billy club to the head. I wouldn't be surprised if some of us go to jail, just like Martin Luther King Jr. did on trumped up charges. Tough times are coming, end quote. He makes you want to take a shower. In Beck's view, President Obama is driven by a desire to settle, quote, old racial scores, end quote. And his ultimate goal is reparations for black Americans. Abe Lincoln and Dr. King could only look on aghast at this clown. Beck has been advertising his rally as non-political, but its main speaker is Sarah Palin. She had her own low moment recently as a racial provocateur, publicly voicing her support for Laura Schlesinger's radio Dr. Laura, who went out of her way to humiliate a black caller by continuously using the N-word to make a point, even after the caller had made it clear that she was offended. Palin's advice? Don't retreat. Reload. There's a great deal of hatred and bigotry in this country, but it does not define the country. The daily experience of most Americans is not a bitter experience. And for all of our problems, we are in a much better place on these matters than we were a half century ago. But I worry about the potential for violence that grows out of unrestrained, hostile bombast. We've seen it so often. A little more than 2 weeks after the 1963 March on Washington, the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham was bombed by the KKK, and four young black girls were killed. And 3 months after the march, Jack Kennedy was assassinated. My sincere advice to Beck, Palin, and their followers is chill, baby. Chill. Bob Herbert, who is one of the best establishment, and I don't say that as a slur, establishment columnists in America. Gene Robinson is another at the Washington Post. I don't know what to add to it. A lot of people say, why are you talking about Beck? Because because he is so rotten, and he is so vile, and is so much a whore. No offense to sex workers. For his own greed and his own ego, his own hubris, his own desire to be somebody important. And the only way to I've come to the conclusion, the only way to really look at this guy is through the lens of humor. Very, very sick humor, but humor nonetheless. The joke is not on us. The joke is on the thousands of people who Beck insists will show up tomorrow. The joke is on them as they stand there with their faces upturned, listening to a punk who loves the adulation, but more than the adulation, he loves the money. It is 7 past the hour. The phone lines are open. The number is 877-996-2556 if you would like to play podcast trivia. Oh, my goodness. That's what we're going to do next. So get online. Right? 877-996-2556, and we'll try to give you a free one-year subscription to the Molloy Show commercial-free podcast downloads. Fire departments around the country are cutting jobs, closing firehouses. I know that's happened here in the Atlanta area. And increasingly resorting to rolling brownouts, that's what they're calling it, in which they shut different fire companies on different days as the depression forces many cities and towns to make these cuts. And as a result, the first responders, firemen and EMTs, are the response time is less, and it is you know, for fires and other emergencies. And I think I remember before Kathy had the heart ablation that took care of that problem she had, the tachycardia that she dealt with all her life and damn near killed her. Three times in my being with Kathy over the past 14 years, three times, it all occurred within the last 18 months. We had to call 911 and get emergency people here to the house. And they always came within 5 or 6 minutes, they were here. And invariably would take care of her. Well, now that she had the operation, it's no longer an issue. But when I think what could have happened to Kathy had the response not come from the fire department, the EMTs, I realized that she could have died in front of her 6-year-old daughter. And when I think about the people who have to deal with this now, we have money for the thugs on Wall Street who continue to take billions upon billions of dollars. We have money sloshing around in this society so that predatory monsters like the Koch brothers can continue to play their head games on the country. All that money's there. It's just it's not where it belongs. The billions and billions and billions of dollars that the ultra super wealthy in this country play with, wipe their rear ends with. And we have cities and towns that are closing, among other things, fire departments. We also have a president who insists on giving billions and billions and billions of dollars for war and death and destruction halfway around the globe. So for the people who don't like to hear your humble and obedient servant criticizing Barack Obama on policy issues, not this garbage that these teabag jerks do, but I mean on real policy issues, I'm sorry it upsets you, but isn't it the truth? It's astonishing, isn't it, that we live in a country that has billions and billions for war and destruction, but a few hundred thousand to keep a fire department, fire station open? Nah. All right, play the music, please. It is time, once again, ladies and gentlemen, for podcast trivia.
I thought we were doing it coming back from break.
Oh. Well, let's play it now. Hey! There's the music. Podcast trivia, where on the Molloy program you can win a 1-year subscription to podcast downloads to the program. A year! With no commercials, retail value of, well, just under $60, which means each one of these gems, if you buy it, costs you a quarter. Ah! But we're going to try to give it to you free. All right, who do we have first in the box here? Is Joe, who's calling from Lehigh Valley, PA. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Mike. Good evening. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Are you ready to do this?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. Where was President George W. Bush when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans on August 29th, 2005? Was he A... Was he A, in the Situation Room at the White House, monitoring the storm's path? B, flying over the disaster area with FEMA Director Michael Brown? C, celebrating John McCain's 69th birthday in Arizona, or D, buying expensive shoes at Ferragamo's in New York?
Mike, I'm going to have to go with C, the birthday and the guitar, that one.
C. Well, you won!
Sweet.
All right, Joe. Way to go.
Fantastic.
It wouldn't have been weird if he would have been in the Situation Room in the White House monitoring the storm's path. The person buying the expensive shoes at Ferragamo's in New York was, of course, Condoleezza Rice. All right, way to go, Joe. Let me put you on hold. Kathy will get all the pertinent information from you. And, congratulations. Roger is in Los Angeles listening on KTLK. Hey, Roger.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm fine. You?
Good.
I was wondering, if this Glenn Beck is trying to do this civil rights, is taking it back or something. Then what do you expect next? Next July 4th, the British will come here and say that they gave the independence, not George Washington fought for it.
It is astonishing what is happening in this country. Just mind warping, astonishing. The audacity of what this punk is doing is, it's beyond belief. But he's doing it because he's an alcoholic. He's had family members, including his mother, commit suicide. This is a very disturbed man. He was a drug user. Just about everything he started, he's dropped out of. He's got some really, really, really serious psychological problems, which don't concern me or America at all, except for the fact that he is using those psychological problems to fuel this hubris, this madness that he's displaying. And right-wingers in this country, conservatives, Republicans, who cannot think on their own, who cannot differentiate between an insane person and someone who's sane, who cannot understand that their president was born in the United States, these people worship Beck. And they should, because Beck provides for them a mommy figure, a daddy figure, a God figure, a leader figure. And the irony is that that's exactly what Beck is looking for. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for checking in. I appreciate it, Roger. Take care. Seth is in Gulfport, Mississippi. Hello, Seth.
What's up, Mike?
You are.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay.
But anyway, I wanted to rant about Glenn Beck and Katrina tonight.
What?
I wanted to rant about Glenn Beck and Katrina tonight.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know what's pissing me off is the fact that the media managed to say that Glenn Beck has compared his event to Woodstock.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and that bothers you that he's comparing it to Woodstock? Seth, does it not bother you that he is he's stepping on real hallowed ground? I mean, not this made up hallowed ground where this mosque is to be built, or this Islamic center is to be built. I wouldn't worry about the Woodstock comparison too much if I were you, Seth. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky.
cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. And earlier tonight, I mentioned the trapped miners in Chile. 33 miners who were trapped in a half-mile-deep cavern. Sincere efforts are being made to get them out by the government. They're in a 540-foot chamber. There's an effort, a massive effort by the people in the government of Chile to keep them alive, while a rescue shaft is being drilled into the space where they are. It's going to take about 3 months to get the for the rescuers to get the men back to the surface. The health minister in Chile said three or four of the men do have some problems. They're not sleeping at night. They're becoming increasingly anxious and irritable after being cramped in that confined space for so long. We're preparing antidepressant drugs for them because it would be naive to think that they would be able to maintain this tremendous optimism for the whole period. The drugs are being prepared for all of them. At least one miner seen in the video, the video cameras dropped down to them, and they put together a rather lengthy video. And at least one miner, according to wherever I got this, New York Times, I don't know. At least one miner displays a key trait the psychiatrists say will help keep all the men motivated and optimistic, and that is the sense that they are, at least in part, in control of their future. The workers said into the camera, quote, there are large numbers of professionals who are going to help in the rescue efforts from down here. So they're looking, in other words, apparently that's a key factor in people who survive. There have been all kinds of studies done about people who are trapped in situations, whether it's trapped as a result of an avalanche or a flood or a mining disaster. And the intriguing thing to people who study the human mind, I don't want to say psychologists or psychiatrists, although maybe that's the proper term, how some people survive under the same conditions that cause other people to give up and die. What is the difference? Allowing for health and so on and so forth. Were the people wounded? Were they not wounded? But I'm talking about the psychological impact of being in these situations. Well, so all of this attention is being focused to get these men out. And here's the part that I wanted to share with you. So far, the mining company that employed the men has played no role in the rescue effort. San Esteban Primera is the company, has claimed that it doesn't have enough money to pay for the drilling of the escape tunnel, which is being funded by the state-owned mining corporation. And it doesn't even have the money to pay the salaries that will be owed to the men when they reach safety. However, yesterday a judge in the nearby city of Copiapo issued an order freezing nearly $2 million in corporate assets. A lawyer representing several of the families said, quote, they said they did not have the money to pay salaries, but we have been working hard to identify their assets and found they do have money, end quote. So the point of that, you know, the mining company has played no role. What? See, a capitalist is a capitalist is a capitalist. I've told you a million times, and you know this before I ever told you. The most expendable aspect of capitalism is the worker. The worker. The worker is useless because he or she can be easily replaced. The machinery is important. The land on which it's built or the mountain under which it's drilled, all of that stuff is important. But the worker can go to hell. And in countries where religion plays a huge role, as it does in Chile, the capitalists understand that all they have to do is nothing. Either the priest will step in or the state will step in. Now, Beck and Palin and the right-wingers in this country would call the state stepping in here socialism. Beck and Palin and the rest of these right-wing monsters in this country would say, well, they shouldn't have gotten a job in the mine. Now they'll just have to die. But the point in this is in The Guardian, by the way, the point of bringing this up, of course, you'll never hear this in American media, ever. Because capitalism here controls American media. Corporatism controls it. But the mining company says it doesn't have enough money to pay for the escape tunnel. I'm sorry, we don't have it. Anybody else want to take over? And they don't have the money to pay the men the salaries that will be owed to them when they are brought to the surface. So, lest anyone thinks that capitalism in the United States has an uglier face than capitalism anywhere on the planet, don't. You know, it was not for nothing that Marx said something to the effect, this is a mistranslation, of workers of the world, unite.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, c'est moi. 25 before the hour. John is in Phoenix listening on Sirius. Hello, John.
Hey, Mike. Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, there's two reasons why I called. The first thing is you're talking about the fire departments being shut down, where you're from.
Right.
You know what gets me is what gets me is 99% of these policemen and firefighters, they're all Republicans. Go figure, huh? And they have socialized jobs.
You think?
I agree with you. Everything is so screwed up. And then you know what? When I was listening to you when you went on break, Channel 146, they had a commercial and they advertised Glenn Beck on 146. What's up with that?
I have no idea. I don't work for Sirius. Sirius just carries my program. I have no idea.
I got you, but yeah, I was really disappointed when that happened. But go figure, you know. I mean, all these socialized workers, I mean, they're all Republicans. I just don't get it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that's the case. Do you know a lot of firefighters who are Republican? I don't know what the political persuasion of firefighters are. I know one soon to be firefighter. Her name is Amy, and she's no more of a conservative than I'm the Pope. I don't know other firefighters, but here's the reason I would tend to probably disagree. Yeah, I almost forgot my son before. Before he decided to go to nursing school, my son was an EMT, and then he was a firefighter. He wanted to be a smoke jumper, and I talked him out of it. And he's very extremely liberal and progressive. That's where I'm trying to find progressive. So the only two firefighters I know, Amy and Chris, are both extremely a progressive in their political attitudes. But I'll tell you something. The reason I question that, John, and, you know, from your experience, you may have found it be true. But with firefighters especially, very few Republicans are going to do that because, first of all, it requires courage. And conservatives don't have that. It requires a desire to go help people. And conservatives don't have that. Being a firefighter means you are willing to put your life at risk to save someone else's. Republicans or conservatives don't have that. It's just lacking in their emotional or their psychological makeup. They simply can't do it. You know, like Dick Cheney, to use an example of a dead man walking. Well, I guess he's still confined to his ICU. But to use him as an example, he so famously said when he was interviewed for Esquire or GQ or something years ago, he said that he had better things to do in the 60s than go join the military. And look at George W. Bush, who cut and run from the Texas Air National Guard. So it is not in the nature of conservatives. I'm not saying all of them, but 99.9% for sure. It's not in their nature to be self-sacrificing to any degree. And a firefighter has to be willing to put his life on the line for somebody else. A cop, I don't know. I've had police officers in my family, and for the most part, they were liberal. I know that that's not the accepted picture, but the police departments in this country have been so militarized, and in the process of being militarized, they have been. I don't know. I just don't want to make, and thanks, John. I don't want to make a sweeping statement about cops because I don't know anymore. I realize, yes. I watch police officers or these special weapons and tactical units whenever you have people protesting the murderous policies of corporatism or capitalism. And I know the cops are more than willing. They seem, some of them, almost eager to use these weapons on unarmed protesters. If that's a function of their political belief, or I have a feeling that so many police officers are just apolitical. I mean, just don't care one way or the other. They're out there. They're going to do their job. And most of them, not most, damn it, there I go again, a percentage of cops are just so gung-ho about what they do that I don't think they pause to consider. You know, I don't know. But firefighters, I would tend to disagree, because being a firefighter, you know, you're not armed. Cop is armed. Maybe that's why there are more conservatives, if there are, in the police force, because they're armed. Now, granted, they need to be, because the bad guys are all over the place. People listen to Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity are ready to commit crimes at the drop of a hat. But firefighters who are not armed, what they are armed with is their courage, their sense of wanting to help, rescue, save, get people out of harm's way. You know what I'm saying? The cops are supposed to go after the bad guys. I realize a lot of instances they go after the good guys. But so anyway, I would tend to disagree about the political nature of a firefighter. And therefore, I think it's on several levels, I think it's an obscenity to cut the number of firefighters in a given area, or to close firehouses, or to get rid of firefighting units because there is a budget shortfall. When we have the capability in this country of spending billions to kill people, billions to invade other countries. It's kind of like the owners of the Chilean mine saying, well, I'm sorry, we don't have enough money to get the miners out of there. Somebody else want to take over? It's that same attitude with the Obama administration and the United States War Department. They don't give a goddamn about firefighters. Oh, come on, please. Firefighters, that's a city. That has to do with city, county, state, whatever. Or not the state, city, county, township. That's none of our business. Yes, it is, because a country that spends $750 billion this year on death and war is a country that could very easily provide money to municipalities to make sure that the first responders are there. But we won't do that. We simply won't do it. And most, if not all, firefighters are union members. They're members of the Firefighters Union. They have to deal with city or county bureaucracies. So You know, that makes it a little bit rough because most bureaucracies, city and county now, are right-wing. And the attitude of a right-winger, if my house isn't burning down, what the hell do I care about firefighters? I hope that answers everything. I know it doesn't. Tom is in Madison listening on the mic. Hello, Tom.
Bonsoir, monsieur. Tutti, c'est moi. Indy, mad, mad, mad.
Yeah.
In French, that means the word that I had to get cut off for.
Oh, okay.
So it's the way those say in French, right?
Marriage?
Is that on the list? Troll Duke?
I'll tell you what.
I can't say that. Oh, boy, I'll get arrested.
I'll tell you what. Why don't you just use your...
Okay, I'm just joking. I just want to clear the air.
Just use your adroit ability to use proper language and tell me.
Come on. I didn't even know I said it.
And tell me why you called.
Well, I wanted to call because I just wanted to add something to what you said way beyond, you know, a little while ago, about an hour or something, about the tea bag deadheads and, you know,
right?
People. I just did an art opening tonight, and, you know, I haven't done one for 5 years. I don't like doing them.
Yeah, too much.
I'm drained because they ask these stupid questions. openings in the core. I live on Willie Street in Madison.
Okay, Tom, I'll tell you what. Tom, I'm going to put you on hold because you're just jabbering, and I think at the art opening tonight you had way too much wine. So I'm sorry, pal. No offense, but you're kind of out of control, and it's just irritating. All right. When you call the program, I realize it's all in fun. I'm not getting in your case, Tom. I'm just saying it's irritating to me, and it's irritating people who are listening. When you call the program, let's talk. Let's find out what you're talking about. But just to keep babbling like that doesn't really add to the program. So next time. All right, Tom. Thanks, pal. Appreciate it. Steve is in Austin, Texas, listening on XM. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Just want to touch one thing on the miners in Chile.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting, the first thing they did, according to the reports now with the cameras they've lowered in there, and the actual narrative got from one of the miners,
mm-hmm.
was that they immediately organized. They set up spaces for their administrative, for their first aid care.
Yeah, they did.
They turned a crate over and they call it their casino to play dominoes and cards on.
Mm-hmm.
And they, appointed the eldest member of the group. I think they said he was 63.
Mm-hmm.
63, and he's a minor.
Mm-hmm.
But they organized immediately, just instinctively, because that's the way they would survive.
Steve, let me put you on hold. I've got to do
sure.
a break here, then we'll come back and finish up the conversation. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Once again, the color of my skin reminds me things ain't changed. You don't care. Then it hit me. Ain't nobody coming to get me. No
He's in the jailhouse now. 10 before the hour.
I told him once or twice.
Before we go back to Steve, just thanks to the crew. Ben Birch for the streaming. I always forget to mention his name. Our military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy. Economic affairs, Bruce Enbert. Education affairs, Kate Petrini. And the program's ethics advisors are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, our engineer and producer, who puts up with an awful lot of crap to get this program on the air every night, is Kathy Bay. Back to Steve in Austin. All right, Steve.
Okay, yeah. The last thing is on the Vic-O-Rama tomorrow. unfortunately, I'm very sad to agree with you totally. I am afraid there will be violence. And I hope that there isn't, because then we will revive another thing from the 60s and 70s, the phrase outside agitators.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there they are, agitators, rearing their ugly heads once again.
Yeah, Beck has already planted that meme in the media and in the crowd, a potential crowd of outside agitators. You know, like most psychopaths on the scale that Beck is a psychopath, he's also very calculating. So he knows what he's doing. There will be violence tomorrow, but Beck already has excuses to explain it.
Yeah, it reminds me of the movie, the title, which was There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm.
And Beck is simply drinking their milkshake.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? All right, Steve, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Regarding firefighters and cops, Justine and Marilyn writes, Mike, don't forget, many fire departments in this country rely heavily and sometimes exclusively on volunteer firefighters. Volunteering to help others in distress, add that to the list of things not in the DNA of Republicans and conservatives. And Jay writes, Mike, so when the mining company says they don't have the money to pay for the rescue, what they really mean is that they were going to socialize the risks, and they never had the capital or loans or whatever to actually fund their raping of the land. Yeah, Jay, yeah, that's true. But this is the way it is with the banking industry in the United States, the financial services industry, so to speak, the casino capitalism. This is what capitalism is all about. The capitalists take... It's always privatized when it's profit. When it's loss or cost, it's always socialized. Every time. And you right-wing pigs that listen to this program, I defy you, if you had the sense to send an email, to give me an example where that's not true. But you can't. So you ignore those kinds of things, and you write nasty emails about wishing my six-year-old daughter was dead. So... no matter what anyone tells you about capitalism, please understand, just look around you as to how it works. I'm a great believer in small businesses, family farms, local entrepreneurs, and the big industry socialized, whether it is energy in all its forms. That would include mining and drilling and all of that. Banking should be socialized. Healthcare should be socialized. Weapons, everything, you know, big things should be socialized. And then that frees people like you and me up to, as long as we play by the rules, to open up any business that we want to. Like I opened this business, or Kathy and I opened this business. Nobody's funding us. Nobody. You know who funds us? The people that buy podcast subscriptions. That's who funds us. But Mike, what about all those commercials? A little bit of money comes in from the commercials. But my point is, we're not capitalists. Because I get emails from people that say, well, you're always busting capitalism. What the hell are you? What am I? I'm a small business owner. And my company employs two people. Two. Kathy and me. That's it. So I have a friend who was running into brick wall after brick wall trying to work for someone else. And he finally went and got a broker's license, and he set up a reverse mortgage company. It's all his. I have so many friends who are just, they're small business owners. Or I have another friend who went back to Emory University, got a degree in public health, and now he works for non-government organizations. He's really a freelancer, but he is so smart about nutrition, where it concerns countries where people are dying because they don't have vitamin D in their milk. And so what Jack does is travel for these non-government organizations. They provide his expenses to come into a country like Moldova or Tajikistan or wherever and set up programs for them. But he works for himself. Nobody can fire him. So when I talk about how filthy capitalism is, how murderous, please understand, I'm not suggesting that everybody become a goose-stepping a communist. Not at all. A democratic socialist? Yes. But understand one thing, and you've heard me say it before, capitalism doesn't care if you live or die. It will take everything you have. It will take your job, your home, your house, well, it's the same thing, your family. It will kill your children. It will destroy your spouse. It will do anything it can to wring every last drop of money or blood it can get out of you. And when it has finally gotten enough, as all it can get, like the miners in Chile or the miners in West Virginia, it will then kick your ass into your own grave and walk away. That's what capitalism is. I'll see you Monday. Have a good weekend, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.